Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts.
Sarah, sing, Sarah.
La la.
Let the singing and the MMA chants commence, ladies and gentlemen, because we have a lot of it. Tomorrow, the UFC and Bellator both have events with a lot of fights on both cards. Luckily, the Bellator card lost a couple today, so we have 26 total fights to look forward to tomorrow. We have UFC Vegas 37. That's where 14 of these fights are going to happen. That one's headlined by Anthony Smith versus Ryan Spann, while Bellator returns to San Jose, their home base, for Bellator 266, headlined by another light heavyweight bout between former champ Phil Davis welcoming the soldier of God, Yoel Romero, to the Bellator cage. We welcome you to our live preview show, getting you ready for this doubleheader of events. I am Mike Heck, and we have a full crew here. First off, we have Mr. Alexander K. Lee, who loves, and I mean loves, a good eight-fight main card as much as the next person. Do you not?
I believe it's only six fights, but I wish it was eight, Mike. I mean, in a perfect world, it would be eight. And let me just say, I am so happy that I am the only, beloved Canadian that you guys have on these shows. It really means a lot to me that you never have any other Canadians on here. So, I'm just excited. Let's keep it that way forever. Right, guys?
One Canadian. I like it.
Yep. Only one Canadian. Thank goodness.
It is six. It was eight yesterday.
I don't know what it was going on.
And then they changed it around because we lost one of the fights, but it was eight yesterday, and I was like, AK is loving this right now. We got E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos, the baddest sash in the media space. Good day to you, Mr. Casey Lydon. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Doing wonderful. It's great having one Canadian on the show. It's just great. It's great. It's great. There's no one else here, right? No one else is on the show, correct?
Actually, there is.
Because what?
This could be by awkward. Popular demand, back on the MMA fighting breakdown circuit, one of the best 135 pounders in the world, one of the best singers in the world, not just in fighting, but just in general. And I still don't understand why her phone hasn't been ringing, not just for the fight world, but maybe to get on American Idol or something. But that's good news for us, because Sarah Kaufman joins us to talk some Saturday face punching. Sarah, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks. You guys doing well?
I think we're doing well. We get a lot of yes, we're doing much better now that you are here to keep us all in line. But we have a lot to discuss.
Wait, before we start, I didn't know guns were a thing in Canada, because apparently Sarah Kaufman. Can I see your guns?
Double barreled.
Ooh. Good grief.
You know, I work out.
Yeah,
here and there.
Western Canada is a lawless land, honestly. It's a lawless land. I don't know what's going on out there.
Neither do
we. My friends, we have a lot to discuss. We have a lot of MMA action to look forward to, and we're going to start with the UFC, and we're going to start with our special guest Sarah Kaufman, because Sarah, Anthony Smith is back in action tomorrow. He takes on Ryan Spann in the main event of UFC Vegas 37. Lionheart has made this walk 51 times already throughout his professional career. Very few in the sport have experienced the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, quite like Anthony Smith. That's a man who's seen it all. Ryan Spann set to make his 7th UFC appearance, first main event, both guys coming off of impressive finishes. What sticks out to you in this main event tomorrow between Anthony Smith and Ryan Spann?
Yeah, I mean, I think that those two losses for Smith, like kind of the two bad ones where, you know, everyone kind of saw it, like he's handing his tooth to someone else saying, like, look at my tooth. To have come back from that and had these past two with Devin Clark and Jimmy Crute, I mean, that leg kick was, like, super kind of crazy in how the finish went, and he just stayed calm and he stayed with it and was able to capitalize on that and then get the finish at the end of that first round. I hope that we see that kind of calm, collected, focused Smith again. Because Ryan Spann, when he comes in, he definitely, that extra length that he has so much power, but I think that he overcommits sometimes. I could see, even though I would say that Spann has the advantage in the wrestling, I could see Smith trying to get this fight to the ground and get a finish with a submission.
AKA Spann, I mean, look, he seems like the up-and-comer against the wily vet, but Spann's been around for a while. He's 30s, had 25 pro fights, trains at Fortis MMA, one of the best gyms in the world, and the UFC obviously sees something in him to give him a headline spot here. It's experience versus the hungry up-and-comer looking to take that next step in the UFC's light heavyweight division. So I'm curious, like, in your eyes, how much does Smith's overall experience matter in a matchup like this?
I think it matters a lot, but I am favoring him. I do like his skill set, but it certainly matters a lot. Like, I've gotten into the bad habit of picking against Anthony Smith. I don't know if I'm just starting to take him for granted. He's obviously still a experienced, a skilled fighter, really tough. I think Jimmy Crute would have beaten him. It was a competitive fight up until the unfortunate injury happened to Jimmy Crute. I still think Crute would have pulled that one out, but clearly, I mean, it didn't look like, oh, he's blowing Anthony Smith out. And if that injury hadn't happened, he obviously would have won. And that was a competitive fight. Devin Clark, you know, another first round submission win for Anthony Smith. So he's almost like in that Derek Brunson-y mold, except for the fact that he got a title shot, where he's losing, you know, to other contenders and top guys, Alexander Rakic, Glover, and of course at John Jones, but other people have not kind of managed to take his spot. So he has this, so from a mental aspect, he kind of knows, like, I'm still this top 10 guy, I'm still this elite guy. He doesn't see guys like Ryan Spann as he certainly sees them as threats. He certainly takes him seriously, but I don't think there's any part of him that's intimidated. He's said as much in kind of interviews recently that Ryan's sort of over the top kind of proclamations and how he built up the fight were just like confusing to him. He's just like, I don't know why this guy's coming at me so hard like this. It's not going to work on me. I've been in over 50 fights. But the experience matters a lot. I mean, for me, that is Smith's greatest gift. I think as skilled as he is, I do think that's what could make the difference if he wins, though I am leaning, as I said, more in Spann's direction. But yeah, you definitely just can't discount a guy who has been in incredibly tough battles with better competition than Ryan Spann has faced so far.
Casey, right now, according to our friends at DK Nation, Anthony Smith is a -170 favorite. The comeback on Ryan Spann is +150. And in my eyes, I think, personally, this fight is properly lined right now. What say you and your thoughts on the fight itself?
Well, it's the second best light heavyweight fight of the weekend. So let's talk about that. I know we'll talk about the other one later. But Ryan Spann hasn't. Oh, by the way, that little thing that's a little headstand for yoga. It looks like a toilet. I just realized that. It looks like a little porta potty. That's all that is. Yeah. We'll do hands. No, we do yoga. Do handstands. It's good for the core. But I lost track. I just saw my blurry toilet in the background.
You said it was the best light heavyweight fight.
Yeah. You bet that.
Thank you, Sarah Kaufman. Professional.
That's why we have two of them, two Canadians on. Anthony Smith, I mean, he's clearly an elite 205er. And he just loses to better fighters. I thought, you know, him losing the Glover, him losing the Rakic, I just think those guys are just better light heavyweights. And he beats Anthony Smith beats the ones that he's better than. I guess this for the UFC and for us, it's just trying to figure out where Ryan Spann is, who he is in his career. Is he just kind of an exciting, you know, mid-carder or is he an elite 205er? I don't believe he's an elite 205er, but hopefully he can maybe prove me wrong tomorrow night. I kind of agree with everything that Anthony Smith said about Ryan Spann. Like, there's nothing that he brings in there that Anthony Smith hasn't seen. And unless Ryan Spann kind of is, unless he's really increased his skill level recently, I just think this is Anthony Smith's fight to win. And although I do agree with the line, I think with the explosiveness of both fighters and Ryan Spann's ability to just kind of finish the fight quickly. But Anthony Smith, he's a hard fighter to put out. All his losses were decisions, right? It was recent losses, Jones, Rakic, and everyone. Those were all decisions.
Glover finished in the fifth. They went to the fifth.
Oh, yeah, that was the fight where he broke it. But even that, I mean, like, Glover's fighting for the freaking title shot. Do we think... are we gonna find out if Ryan Spann's that good? Is he a potential title contender? I don't know. I don't think he is, but I love being proven wrong.
Well, let's get to official predictions. Sarah, you're going with Anthony Smith here?
I think Smith.
AK?
Yeah, I'm going with Ben. I think Smith is. He can definitely take a hit. We know this. Like we said, we even mentioned the Glover Teixeira fight where it was so one-sided, uncomfortable at times. But, I mean, I guess he was tough enough to stay in there. You know, it wasn't. He certainly wasn't going to bow out. You know, a lot of the discussion was whether his corner should throw in the towel, but that's a whole other thing. So he's tough, man. But I think Spann, his game is, again, right now it's pretty simple. It's still developing, but I think what he does really well. And I do love that he's with such a strong camp and I feel like is, you know, only starting to peak. I don't even think we've seen close to the best of him. So I guess it depends whether you feel like, you know, he's going to start reaching that potential soon or if it's still not going to happen and he needs to face, again, kind of lesser competition than Anthony Smith. I think he's ready. So I see him picking up a finish. Not a quick one, though. I actually think he's going to show some maturity and it's going to go third or fourth round and we'll have a Ryan Spann knockout in one of those frames.
Ooh. Casey, you're on team Lionheart. Right?
I go with experience. I go with him just being a veteran, him having more high-level experience. I just can't get out of my head that Spann had a split decision with Sam Alvey just less than a year ago. So, and
Alvey's tricky. He messes with a lot of people.
Well, clearly he's tricky because he's still in the UFC after like 30 losses in a row. So he's doing something right. So
I can name one fighter who I think deserves more in the UFC than not to take any shots at Sam Alvey. I'm just saying there's one fighter who I can think of who has a lot of success and a lot of different promotions who should be in the UFC. Instead of Sam Alvey. With apologies to Sam Alvey.
This isn't meant to be the Sam. I feel like we're shitting on Sam Alvey now. But
in case the video's not working right now. Yeah. In case the video's not working right now, we're all pointing at Sarah Kaufman. I just want that to be clear. Okay.
I'm very high on Anthony Smith in this matchup. And but if Ryan, like you said, Ryan Spann, he's going to have to show something that I think we haven't seen yet. Because I still think Anthony Smith is... And I don't know if in his prime, but he's still an elite top five light heavyweight in the UFC. And so I'm picking Anthony Smith. Pretty. I think it's gonna be it's a small cage, five rounds. Let's go fourth round submission, Anthony Smith.
Yeah, Anthony is as tough and as durable as they come. He's been in there with heavy hitters. He's proven that durability throughout his career, sometimes too much, i.e. the Glover Teixeira fight, but I just think he's the more well-rounded fighter here. I think if he can avoid getting colded in the first 8-9 minutes of the fight, I think Smith will be able to take control. He'll start to wear Spann out, frustrate him, and I too think he gets a submission, but I think he gets it a round earlier than Casey does. I think he gets it in the third round, so we'll see what happens. That's why we have
fight. I think round three.
Sarah, do you think
on an island?
What do you think of the small cage? Do you think the small cage benefits any fighter in particular, or is this just going to be the small cage just makes the action better? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the small cage is a big factor specifically for smaller fighters, like the lighter weight classes, the shorter fighters. For the larger fighters, and these guys are both so tall, I think it's going to favor more clinch work, more wrestling, more takedowns, because they don't have the space to move. Whereas I think for lighter weight classes, shorter fighters, it favors more knockouts and finishes because people can't just run away and it's harder to cut off the cage. So with these guys being so tall, I think we're going to see more of that distance being closed. Not that I think either one wants to keep like a long jab, a long range. I think that it's going to be fought in close. And I think this plays into Anthony Smith being able to kind of get the control that he wants and not kind of get outstruck from the outside and be able to see those like big shots and the faster strikes coming in because there's not as much distance that needs to be covered.
Sarah, was the Invicta cage, how did the UFC cage compare to like Invicta and Strikeforce? The Strikeforce cage always seemed huge to me. I don't know if it was just a different shape, so maybe it looked bigger. And then Invicta, was Invicta the same size, similar to the UFC, or are we talking all kinds of different sizes here? Did you even notice when you're in there?
I don't know that I noticed in particular. The UFC, like the 30-foot cage is huge. Like that cage, the big cage, is just a very vast expanse of cage. It's just, you're like a whole arena away from someone else. And it is harder to cut off that cage a little bit more. But I say anyone that are in like the 22 to 28, just, you know, that's kind of, I don't think that I notice the distance. I'm definitely more of a pressure fighter. So I'm always feeling like people are running away and not wanting to engage and I have to cut them off. So because I don't use the expanse to try and get that distance, I would say that I don't notice it as much as an advantage for me. But I do think that like the 30 foot is a very noticeably larger space than a 25. Invicta is maybe a bit smaller than that. I'm not exactly sure. But for me, it was appropriate. But I would say for heavyweights in a smaller cage or light heavyweights that are like 6'5", 6'6", it does make a difference how the action is played out.
Yeah.
That was the main event. AK, I'm gonna jump back to you here because I think you probably know where I'm going with this. This is one of those cards with a lot of fights. We had 15 fights as of this time yesterday. We lost Nicholas Mata versus Cameron Van Camp. That was canceled due to an injury. Of course, Van Camp was going to make his UFC debut, replacing Jim Miller, who was forced to withdraw due to testing positive for COVID-19. But there are some competitive matchups, and there's some exciting up-and-coming names on this card as well. So what fighter, or storyline do you have circled outside of the main event? And I think after one of the specific face-offs today, after the weigh-ins, I think I know your answer. Go ahead.
Listen, I have been loath to refer to the Yuan Kutalaba and Clark fight as a co-main event. You know what I mean? I think we've sort of had a discussion before, like not every fight that is second to last is like officially a co-main event, no matter what a promotion like may choose to dub it. So I was like, I guess Kutalaba Clark, I feel like it's just kind of there as the second last fight. After seeing their face off, this is my main event now. Sarah Kaufman, did you see this thing? Did you see this face off between Kutalaba and Clark?
I didn't see the face off. I was getting swole.
Okay. Casey, if you could somehow – that's okay. You were getting swole. I was getting fat watching this face off. Casey, if you could send her the link or something quickly, I will describe it though. I'm watching it now myself. So as we know, Kutalaba, he's pretty wild when he gets into face-offs. You know there's going to be something crazy. This was like four different crazy things happened. So Kutalaba first starts off doing like a Salt Bae thing directed at Clark, kind of like I'm salting him, I'm seasoning him for Saturday's fight, which that's kind of cool. I'm like, okay. Clark's not playing along. He's got like his hand out. He's almost like trying to force push him away. And poor Sean Shelby's in there. Like he wants to separate them, but he also's like, oh, this is kind of a fun face-off. I don't want to overreact. So then Kutalaba screams, which is fine. They both flex, not at the same time. They're not in sync at all. Kutalaba goes in to, I think, confront him again. Clark has his hand out, but with his other hand also kind of accidentally gently caresses Kutalaba's other hand. It's insanely awkward. Shelby again goes in to separate. Clark just keeps the shaking hand, the offered hand out extended for what feels like 30 seconds in what is actually like a clip that in its total is less than 30 seconds long. Kutalaba finally relents and gives him an over-enthusiastic, like to compensate for it, hand slap into a transition into a, you know, hand clutch thing, like a predator, you son of a bee, CAA got you pushing too many pencils thing. And then it's just super awkward. And then they still, like, they don't know how to separate. And then Clark wants to kind of go in for a hug, and then Shelby has to separate them again.
No, Kutalaba wants to go in for the hug.
Okay, Kutalaba suddenly wants to go in for a hug. And then Clark is into it.
And then security's kind of freaking out because they're like, yeah. Wait, do these guys want to hug or they want to fight? They can't tell.
Yeah, we don't want a close Steven situation here, right? So, you know, plus, you know, they're supposed to be distancing.
I like this hand. I just watched it. The hand. Okay. The spider. What was that, a spider hand?
Salt. He's salting him. He's seasoning him.
Oh.
Seasoning. Oh, Saturday. I'm going to have you for dinner, pal.
We thought he was a spider. Like, yeah. Like, itsy bitsy spider.
Maybe it was that, too. I heard you're arachnophobic. Oh, don't watch out for the spider. So I'm sorry. Anyway, for anyone, the clip is up for my – if that description confused people, the clip is all over the UFC's socials. It's very short, though it feels like it lasts like 10 minutes long. It's magnificent, and I cannot wait to see this fight because it's just so awkward and the kind of moment you can't manufacture. It's like you need a guy like Cucalaba, you need a guy like Devin Clark and Sean Shelby in there to make this magic happen. So that was wonderful.
And props to Devin Clark's mustache. Looks great. Just want to say.
I feel like your description of this video like really sold it to me when I then just watched it. Uh-huh. I like was looking for like the hand caress and the.
It's
and
there.
I mean, that's a solid description.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, Sarah. Yes, I've watched it many times. I've watched it many times.
It's about four face-offs in one.
It's so good. It's so good.
I felt where both guys are coming from because being in Florida last week, covering that Triller event and doing all those interviews, I guessed wrong on the ending exchange every time, except for maybe one. Like, do we fist pound? Do we handshake? And I, outside of Junior Dos Santos, which I think was my final interview at ATT, I guessed all wrong. When I thought it was a fist bump, it was a handshake. When I thought it was a handshake, it was a fist bump. I guessed wrong every freaking time. It was crazy. So I understood kind of where both guys were coming from. I'm like, I feel your awkwardness, bros.
You should just lead with the dap, right? Lead with the dap, and then as they're shaking, then open the hand, right? It's hard. It's happened so quickly, but.
I did that with Marlon Moraes, and he just handfully extended, would not let up from that. And I was like, let's transition to the handshake. So that's your fight.
I can do this one. And then I just go like this. And then I just high five their hand because I don't like doing the knuckles. So this is always a good start because then you can give them a, you know.
Do you ever just grab the fist and just shake the fist like that when they just
shake the fist?
I mean, turn it like a doorknob.
I feel like I've done this before and like, all right, we're handshaking now, you know.
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
You should try just grabbing the hand, their fist with both hands and no shake. Just hold on to it, and see how they react.
Look at it lovingly.
No, look them in the eyes. Just look them right in the eyes.
And then see if they're scared of spiders.
And then give them the spider.
We're going off the rails already.
Sorry. What was
So AK is going with the co-main event.
We're still talking about fights.
UFC Vegas 37.
And Casey, what's yours? Outside of the main event, which fight, fighter, storyline you got circled? That you're looking forward to seeing tomorrow.
I'm super excited when Armin Zarukian gets the fight. He's just one of the best light heavyweight prospects right now in the UFC, and this is a bit of a showcase fight. I think he's like a minus 800 coming into this fight against Christian. How do you say his name? Chagos.
Christos Chagos.
Yeah, he's I think last I saw he was a minus 800 favorite, which I think is correct. So I'm just excited. I love showcase fights. I love showcase fights. So this should be a good one for Zarukian. I don't know anything about Mandy Baum. I know she's fighting Queen of Violence Lipsky. So I just don't know anything about her. I'm excited to see the improvements of Miss Penny Kinzad. She has a big fight against Raquel Pennington. A few years ago, Miss Sarah Coffin beat the crap out of her. But, you know, fighters improve. You know, she improved. Penny is a much better fighter, I think, now than when we saw her in Invicta. She actually has improved. And this is going to be a big test for her. This is a bit of a prospect versus vet. I don't know if you want to call Penny still a prospect, but her versus Raquel Pennington is an important fight for the bantamweight division. Bantamweight division that's severely lacking new names, especially at the top, in the top five. So if Penny can get a very convincing win against Raquel Pennington, who knows if Penny could be, you know, 1-2 wins away from eventual title shot, which would be an incredible turnaround for her career, I think. But obviously, Raquel is going to be a tough out, man, tough out for her. And I'm excited about the UFC debut of Invicta veteran Erin Blanchfield. I think she's only like 22 or something. And
she's so young, yeah.
Super young, but a lot of potential. So we'll see where she's at. So it's a fight night card. So a lot of good prospects versus vets. So I like it.
One of the people on the show has beaten Penny Kianta in a fight. I'm not going to say who. Listeners, if you can guess which of the commentators on today's show have beaten Penny Kianta.
I already mentioned it earlier.
He already said that.
I already said it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I totally missed that. Wait, what did you mention? Like just now or earlier?
Like just like 2 seconds ago when I was talking about
that. Like just like 45 seconds ago.
Stop watching the face off, AK.
I'm sorry. I had to watch it again.
Wait, is it Sarah Kaufman? Let me take
it. You know what? It is Sarah Kaufman. Yeah, it is. You got it.
We did it. Nate, you know what? Yeah. Hand out. You got there.
There it is. Nate Maness versus Tony Gravely is going to be an awesome fight. What a great fight. What a great matchup. That's not what I'm looking forward to the most. And to me, I've been saying this since before he was even on the Contender Series, and I still believe these words 3+ years later. I think Montel Jackson is going to fight for a UFC title one day. He has such natural ability, the athleticism, the explosion, and this guy is like maybe 50% of the fighter that he's actually going to be. He's still a little raw, still a little green. So he's only going to get better. And what we've seen is far and away, far from the finished product. And he was supposed to fight Danah Batgirl, I think, on this card. Now he gets JP Bayes, who is as game as they come, no doubt about it. But he's taking this fight on short notice. He's going up to 135 to do so. And Jackson is the second biggest favorite on the card, and rightfully so. I think this could be a showcase fight for Montel Jackson. I'd like to see him get through this fight, get another step up. I don't know if like a Brett Johns level is the right way, but I definitely would like to see him get somebody close to the top 25 after this fight. I always have Montel circled on my card. Props to JP Bayes for taking this fight because, man, what a tough second fight to have with that guy. Montel Jackson is an absolute monster. So, Sarah, your thoughts, what fighter storyline sticks out to you heading into tomorrow's UFC event outside of the main event itself?
I feel like Casey pretty much said what I wanted to say and mentioned all the people that I wanted to talk about. So I actually just looked up Mandy Bohm. Is that how you say her name? Mandy Bohm? I feel like that fight with Lipsky is kind of like when Joanne fought Lipsky. Lipsky came in at the time like a pretty hot prospect. Mandy. She's undefeated. I actually watched a couple of her fights earlier today. Like, she has a really nice long jab, great stand-up, great range, and ability to keep the range. I think this is going to be a really hard fight for Lipsky. But if Lipsky can come out and put something together, you know, I haven't seen that much of Mandy. But given Ariane's last fights, two losses in a row, ground and pound, I feel like this is kind of like a make or break fight for Lipsky at this point. And coming into the UFC, I think that Mandy's going to be really sharp. It'll be interesting to see the level of competition. Like, she hasn't faced that high as Ariane has. So, Ariane. Yeah, that's her name. Oh, what am I even saying? Names are confusing. But I do think that Lipsky, if she loses this fight, might be her kind of, you know, send off. And that this might be a great opportunity for Mandy to come in and make a name for herself. So we'll see how that goes. Of course, I'm always invested in the 135 fights. Every time I hope that someone is unable to make a fight so that I can take the fight. But since this fight's going on, they've both made weight. It's happening. I think that Penny, I just realized she's on a 4-fight winning streak. She's kind of under the radar, has made like quite a big move up in the division, especially coming in on the Ultimate Fighter. She lost, she got released or didn't get signed after fighting Macy, had a fight outside the UFC, took the fight on short notice when she came back and lost to Avila, but it got her in the door again. And now she's had 4 wins against some really good opponents. This is the next step up for her. I think she might struggle with Pennington's size and ability to hold the distance, hold that strength, and kind of I see this kind of being a clinch fight against Cage. If Penny gets taken down, her ground has improved a lot. I'd like to see her get the win because it's, again, a fresh name coming into that top five. Maybe one more fight, and then you give her a title shot, and that would be really fun. I mean, I always like people that I've fought and that I beat to do really well because it just makes me look better. So I'm really happy for her. I like Penny a lot. I like she does interviews with no teeth in her mouth, and I find it hilarious. So I hope that Penny wins this, but I could see it being a really tough fight for her. But that's probably the fight that I'm most excited about.
If Penny wins this, honestly, like I don't know if we have like a most improved fighter of the year or whatever, but Penny might be that fighter. I mean, I honestly, when she came in and lost to Avila, I thought she was done in the UFC. I thought we wouldn't see anymore. And I'm looking at my Tapology picks against Betchkohea, Sarge Eubanks, and Alexis Davis. I picked against Penny every fight. I thought Alexis Davis was going to roll right through Penny, and then Penny won that. So I don't know if that's an indictment of Alexis Davis just maybe not being the same fighter she used to be, or is Penny just that much improving? So, yeah, like everything that Sarah said, if Penny looks good tomorrow night, who knows? You know, we might have a new title contender, you know?
Sarah, did you know that you beat Penny Kianzad in January 20? Did you mention that? Did you guys mention this?
It might have been mentioned. Although I will say that when I fought Penny, and I like still think of it, I landed like a few like upwards leading elbows, and it was like a shining moment in my career because it is incredible to land an elbow directly upwards into someone's face. And I've been thinking about that. I've been coaching a lot of elbows lately, and I brought up and I showed a clip from this fight. And so I'm really happy that she's doing well, but also that I got to elbow her in the face and we can still be friends after.
Wait, you did an up elbow? Like, what was the elbow you did?
Yeah, like she jabbed, like, bam, right through the middle.
Oh, you lead elbow. Oh, nice.
Oh, lead elbow. It's just.
They're good.
Oh, it's fun stuff.
Mike, Casey, just for the record, if you guys ever do that to me, we will not be friends after. So we would not have the same kind of respect that these fighters have. That's a friendship ender if you guys do that to me. So,
hey, the elbow, it felt good. It will feel good. So, you know.
No.
Well, for one person.
It does for one person.
Do it to like Jed or something.
Yeah.
Don't do it to anybody.
Mr. No Fun over here. Jeez.
Don't hit people in the face. Don't try to split their skull open with your elbow. Oh, jeez.
By the way, Casey, I don't know if you're aware of this, but after Jed's win over Jose on BTL, he called you out.
Let me think about that.
Oh, it might be a verbal upwards elbow coming Jed's way.
I don't know what the stream looks like. I don't even know if we have a stream right now, but
it's kind of been going. It's kind of been going on and off, so people have stuck with it. It hasn't been great, but I've been.
Other people are watching.
Yeah. So I've been telling people just, you know, sorry about the difficulties, and look for the you know, the video, the full. Yeah,
we'll upload the whole thing in a sec.
But anyone sticking with it, thank you guys. Some people are still here. So.
And leave your questions because after we talk about Bellator, we will answer some of them.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Let's go to San Jose, Bellator's home base. Promotion returns to the SAP Center. Phil Davis versus Yoel Romero in the main event, Bellator 266. And AK, Phil Davis is a tough out for anybody. And from a stylistic perspective, he's the kind of fighter that can take a fighter's strengths and just kind of flip them on their ears. And he has that grinding style. But he did show in the Vadim Nemkov fight in April that he's got a little explosiveness. He can be exciting when he needs to be. So let me ask you this. Romero's debut is something that fans have been looking forward to ever since he signed with Bellator. He was supposed to fight Rumble Johnson in the first round of the Grand Prix before the eye issue. Everyone was looking forward to that fight. So after all that went down, the Grand Prix's underway. Neither guy's in it right now. Was this the right fight to make for Romero's Bellator debut, or would you have gone a different route?
I mean, I'm not a fan of it at all. I think I'm like a lot of people. I thought, stylistically, this could be an ugly clash on paper. As far as like high level stuff, I like that. I like that at least they're saying, hey, look, we think Yoel Romero, even though he has, you know, he's moving back up to 205. He hasn't fought 205 in a long, 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 long time. Obviously, his stardom was made at middleweight. That they think he is immediately, you know, one of their top five light heavyweights. That's why they signed him. So were there better options, again, from a possible like style and entertainment standpoint? Certainly. But this is, I do like the message this sends that, look, we are not just, yes, we understand you might have wanted us to put him in there with someone that like it's more likely he can get an explosive knockout against or look good against. Like, this isn't a showcase fight, which Casey had mentioned earlier. This is not one of those. Mm-hmm. But it could be a showcase fight for both guys if it's competitive. You mentioned the Nemkov fight. I thought that was one of the best light heavyweight fights I'd seen in a while. It was just so, every dimension of it, like you see how experienced both guys are, how skilled they were. I really don't think people talk about that fight enough. It was just such an enjoyable, technical, fun fight to watch. So yes, technical and fun. I know some people don't think those can go together. And I think I'm not saying we'll see that with Romero and Davis. Like, I think people know Romero's style. It can be a bit, you know, you got to wait and see, wait to counter, you know, it's not going to be necessarily a back and forth, bang over brawl. But he can do that with Paulo Costa. That was an exciting one. So I'm leaning optimistically as to this being, a better matchup than maybe most of us thought it would be from an entertainment standpoint. So I'll tip my hat to the matchmakers here. Maybe we didn't see the genius behind it before, but I actually kind of like it now.
Are you tipping your hat to the matchmakers here, Casey, or are you keeping your hat fully planted on your head, no moving of the hat at all?
Well, I mean, the entertainment portion of me who just wants, you know, bloody violence, you know, elbows, violence, you know, no tipping of the hat. You know, Phil Davis is not that type of guy. But in terms of just pure sport, this is an awesome fight. It's just an awesome fight. I think Phil Davis is, without a doubt, to me, the most underrated fighter, maybe in at least at 205. To me, he's a top. I think at least in our worldwide rankings, I'm pretty sure I have Phil Davis ranked higher than anyone else amongst the journalists who submit. But like Phil Davis, who's he lose to? He's lost two close fights, two very close fights to Ryan Bader. And he got beat up by Anthony Johnson and a prime Rashad Evans back in 2012. You know, so he doesn't lose fights. He doesn't make mistakes in fights. He's so freaking good. So this fight could potentially be an absolute horrible fight entertainment-wise to watch, especially with how Yoel Romero, which can just, he'll just kind of shell up and just wait to explode. And Phil Davis just doesn't make mistakes. So Romero needs his opponent to open up, I feel. And I don't think Phil Davis will ever do that. Now, how will Phil Davis actually win? Will he take Romero down? Will he hold him on the ground? I actually don't know how Phil Davis. I'm picking Phil Davis to win, but I don't know how he'll win. But it's a weird fight. It's a weird fight. I like it, but also I hate it. But I get why it was made. But what was the better option? Who do you think, or if you're against this matchup, who should have Romero fought, or should have been a showcase fight as a co-main event? I don't know. We want to kind of, you know, people are kind of poo-pooing the matchup. But what, I don't know. I mean, he was fighting Anthony Johnson before. So, I mean that was the original matchup. So, I'm not sure. I don't know. He got a maybe an easier opponent. I'm not sure. Is this a better? I don't know.
Melvin Manhoef?
Machida? Hey, you know what? Corey Anderson got that. He fought Machida, right? He fought Machida in UFC at 85.
Yagshimuradov?
Yeah. That would have been an interesting one. The wild card of the light heavyweight division.
That's all I got here.
So here are the betting lines as of right now. Phil Davis, a slight favorite at -125, +105, the comeback on Yoel Romero. Sarah, let me ask you this as a professional fighter yourself. With Phil Davis, win or lose, he has sort of cemented his place in this division. He just fought for the title. He's been the champion. He still has a name. He'll still find himself headlining cards for Bellator until his career is over. He's in a pretty good spot right now. He's probably quite the ways away. He may not ever fight for the title again. For Romero, he's making his debut. He's lost 3 in a row coming over from the UFC. All of those fights have been debated decisions that have gone against him, most notably the second Robert Whittaker fight. Every fight has pressure. Every fight is a must win in the eyes of the fighter. But is this like the prototypical must win for Yoel Romero, much more so than Phil Davis here?
100%. At this point for Yoel, I mean, there's talk like, do we even know how old he actually is? I mean, he has had so many fights. He's had so much experience, you know, competing prior to MMA in the Olympics. Like, he's just been around in martial arts for so long. I think at this point, I agree with Casey that he's not really going to open up. He doesn't have the gas tank he once had. So I think that he tends to now stay back, wait for something to happen, wait for them to come in, hopefully hit them really hard. They fall down, fight's over. But I don't think we're going to see a super fast pace. And I agree, Phil Davis is going to be very careful. How this works out for Yoel, maybe he doesn't get finished. But if he doesn't have a win here, what's he doing? Like, I guess maybe he's showing up for a paycheck at this point. But as a fighter, I think you should only be fighting if you think you can be the best and want to be the best. I guess for other people, it's like you're getting paid enough that it makes sense to continue fighting. But there has to be a trade-off for that. The amount of work you're putting in, the damage you're taking in a fight, in training camp, this is a must-win for Yoel. And I don't know that he's going to get that. So do we see him continue to fight after, or does he just retire? That I don't know. If it was me, I would probably take it as this is probably my retirement. But maybe he'd want to have another fight or two, get paid for it, hopefully go out on a win. But really, in terms of making waves and doing anything further in the sport, he needs this to be a win. Otherwise, this is kind of like the hill that he's sliding down on.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a must-win for Romero. I'm sure Bellator invested quite a bit of dollars in him. I mean, the man is a super athlete. He's 44 years old. Did you see him at the weigh-ins today? Good grief. Guy is gigantic. And he makes an immediate impact with a win here. Immediate.
Oh.
A win does way more for Romero than it does for Phil Davis. Not even close.
Definitely.
Way more.
See, and that's why the way you just said it about how the Bellator is really invested in Yoel Romero, that's why I kind of question this matchup, because I don't think the casuals really understand how difficult it is to beat Phil Davis, and that's the problem. I just think they just don't know. People don't know how hard it is to beat Phil Davis, and I think I think Bellator can got kind of the same bang for its buck if they would just put a random 205er in there. So I just think this is very dangerous matchmaking. Obviously, if Romero can, you know, finish Phil Davis, which no one's ever done. No one's even come close to finishing Phil Davis, to be honest. I don't even think he's really even been, like, even close to having a 10-8 round, 8-10 round, rather. So just super risky matchmaking for Bellator.
And look, either way, if Vadim Nemkov beats Anthony Johnson next month, which odds are he has a very good chance of doing, you still get the Romero-Johnson fight right there whenever you need it. Just pick it up, put it in, you're good.
So that's why I don't necessarily think this is a must win for Romero. Like you said right there, I mean, if Anthony Johnson loses, they'll still do Johnson Romero. So that's all.
But that's it, though. That's kind of where it ends. I mean, you could just throw him in there. If anybody's just kind of a highlight guy, Yoel Romero versus whoever, people are going to watch. But in terms of getting to the title and getting these, like, massive, massive fights, he's got to win this one.
I think, I don't know. Yeah, I understand from a practical and from a common sense and a logical standpoint, he needs this to stay a contender. But from an MMA standpoint, I could see him, like, losing and, like, somehow getting a title shot anyway. If he loses, like, a decision, right? It's MMA, right? It's he loses a 5-round decision. Phil Davis isn't available to compete in, like, 3 or 4 months. You know, he wants to take some time off, and they're like, well, competitive fight, Yoel, you're the number one contender. Like, I could really see that happening, and I could see a lot of people not having a problem with it.
And also, he loses, and then he jumps Vanderford and fights. Yeah. Musasi for the title.
What's the thing? I was gonna say this. Also, remember, this is at 205. Mm-hmm. I think I'm pretty sure Romero's last fight at 205 was against his lone Strikeforce fight when he fought Javier Cavalcante, Feijão, and he got knocked out. Which that was Feijão kind of at his height too, well, near his height as far as a fighter. So it wasn't a bad loss, but he's still never beaten a name opponent at 205. So even if he does lose, we do still have 185. And have we ever had Musasi Romero happen? Is that fight happened yet? Was that UFC fight ever?
I don't think so.
Does not happen.
So yeah, maybe if Romero loses, we could see Vanderford Romero. And then that winner.
So unfair. So unfair to Vanderford.
Yeah, Vanderford's got the title shot. Right,
oh, Vanderford.
Now. Right now.
Well, I would think Romero needs a win at 85 to fight Musasi, I would think. But who knows?
Does he?
You know what? You're right. F it. So, yeah. Either way.
So you're picking Davis, Casey?
Okay. Yes, picking Davis in a lackluster but dominant 3-round decision.
Sarah?
Also Davis, also a decision. We might just fall asleep watching it, but I think he wins.
AK, why are you picking Romero?
Chaos. Romero, fifth round. Fifth round knockout.
Is it a 5-round fight?
No, it is not.
It is not?
Good job, AK.
Casey just said 3 rounds, so.
It is 3 rounds.
The first 3 rounds will be so close that they will announce that there will be 2 extra rounds to determine the real winner, and then Romero will get it. Third round knockout for Yoel Romero.
Hey, right. Do you know Sarah Coffin fought Pandy Kinzad?
I think I would have heard about
it. Okay,
that,
I'm just saying.
If that were a thing. By the way, I'm amazed. Bellator, one of the few, maybe the only major promotion that has not been blessed by the talents of Sarah Coffman. So,
well, if they'd put a 35 division in, come on, folks. That would,
yeah.
25, yeah. Too small. 45, too big. 35, where it's at.
Perfect.
Have you fought at 45, Sarah? I know you fought at 55 PFL. Have you done 45? Or
I
you just
45, oh, like, yeah. On my start of my career.
Or very early.
I did, like, 45, 45, 40, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, 35, however many, 35. 55.
Up to 55.
Also, my cauliflower ear doesn't hold my headphones.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's it looks. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
you gotta get the ease.
It is my hope that these two guys go out there and put on an amazing fight. I feel like that could happen if the stars align. I know Phil has that reputation that we talked about earlier. He's fine with that reputation. I just spoke with him a couple weeks ago. It is what it is. Romero's just so explosive, but as we saw in the Adesanya fight, he feeds off of mistakes and he feeds off of fighters who are willing to play his game. Phil Davis has been up and down the block a few times, as Casey and Sarah have alluded to. This, to me, has potential Romero-Weidman vibes written all over it, where I can see Davis taking control, slowing Romero down, possibly winning the first two rounds with the grinding style, only to have Romero capitalize on Davis, sort of having a false sense of security and landing an explosive knockout. But I just think Davis is too seasoned for that. Again, not in my eyes, not a ton at stake for him. He's playing with house money, in my view. So with that said, I think you all will have his moments, but I think Davis will win a decision tomorrow night. And yeah, I don't know what this fight's going to look like. I'm more leaning on the side of fans being somewhat disappointed in the actual action of the fight. But from like an MMA stylistic technique standpoint, it's going to be an interesting fight. Chess match galore. I'm excited for it.
Hey, we were all poo-pooing Nemkov, Phil Davis, and that was a great fight. So,
a really good fight.
Yeah, I think the problem. I think when Phil Davis has bad fights, entertainment wise, they're very bad. So I think we just remember those. Even though Phil Davis, I mean, he has some big finishes, you know, and Bellator and UFC. We just kind of forget about those because all we just have that memory of these. Just I feel like the Ryan Bader fight's still going right now.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, so that is the main event. Rest of the main card for Bellator. Neiman Gracie is back, taking on Mark Leminger. That is the co-main event. Alejandra Lara is back, taking on Deanna Bennett, who missed weight today. Saul Rogers is back.
Yeah.
By 3 pounds, I think. Georgie Karkanian taking on Saul Rogers. That's a fun fight. And then the main card will open up with Ben Parrish taking on John Jones' protege, Christian Edwards, who has a lot of potential at 5-0. This dude is an explosive individual. So a lot of debut fighters, a lot of fighters who are like 1-0, 0-2. So the prelims, some fresh meat, so to speak. And then the experience level gets a little bit bigger and bigger and better on the way up the main card. So AK, any other Bellator fight stand out to you that you're just like, oh, forget the UFC, I'm watching that fight?
I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far. We have a Gracie popping up. We have Holland Gracie will be on the prelims. I think this is his Bellator debut, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure. He's not his pro debut. I believe it's his Bellator
debut. He hasn't fought in 14 years.
Yeah. Well, so young gun. He's only 34. Okay, so interesting. So apparently he tried the MMA thing some time ago, and I guess it didn't work out. And you know, you can always go home again, as it were. But yeah, I mean, I'm very excited, of course. Alejandra Lara and Deanna Bennett. It's a shame that Bennett did miss weight, and by such a pretty wide amount. Mm-hmm. Putting that aside for now, really nice competitive fight. I think I still see Lara as someone who can be like, I know she's had her shot at the flyweight title. I think she's still developing. I think there's someone who could be a future champion. This is someone who, like, she's had her shots. She's been pushed pretty hard by Bellator already, but I think she sticks with it. She has the kind of like skill set and kind of potential to make it, and certainly the charisma that Bellator would want in a champion, as someone that they would want to push to the top. So, yeah, really looking forward to that fight. And Deanna Bennett's always fun to watch. So again, it's a shame she missed weight, but that's definitely the other standout fight on the main card.
Sarah, what's got your eye on this Bellator card?
I mean, again, I actually don't know a lot of these names, especially on like the lower half of the card, but I really enjoy watching Lara fight. I'm always, of course, drawn towards watching the females fight. I feel like I'm invested in it, even if it's not my weight class. I thoroughly enjoy Laura. I think that she's pretty smooth to watch. You can see that she's improving. She's growing. She's still changing as a fighter. Bennett, while she's fun to watch, I mean, she's missed weight quite a few times for different fights. And I feel like I've always seen her struggling making weight and like not really finding a weight class that seems appropriate for her. She's not that big, but now that she can, you know, she's missing for 25, I'm surprised by that. So I don't really know, you know, what goes on in her camp and behind the scenes. But I do think that this fight potentially could be a tough fight for her.
Casey, you got a wild card Bellator fight?
I agree with the Canadians. Laura. She's a joy to watch. She just has this charisma. She's improving. She's had some losses, but she's lost to a very good fighter. She doesn't know. So Deanna Bennett, like, as much as I want to watch her fight, she's had some kind of stinker fights. She's a very nice person, a great personality, but it doesn't really kind of come off in her actual fights. So I'm just hoping this is going to be an exciting fight, a fight that both these ladies get to show off their whole skill sets. But I think this is Lara's time to really shine. And I like Lara. She's awesome.
Yeah, Karkani and Rogers should be fun. Rogers, one of the more interesting stories in MMA. I'll throw a little spotlight on Mark Leminger. Interesting guy.
I forgot about him.
Pretty soft spoken. Bellator seems to like him. They just re-signed him to a new deal. He beat the brakes out of DeMarcus Johnson in his last fight, or DeMarcus Jackson. But the two prior fights that he had were to the champion Yaroslav Amosov, and then he fought Jaleel Willis, who are two very tough outs at this stage in their careers, especially Amosov, who's now the champion. They're giving him Neiman Gracie, so clearly Bellator wants to do something with him, but it's up to him to get over that hump. And if he can beat Neiman Gracie, he's got a good chance to do that at 170 pounds. So that should be an interesting fight because Leminger's very good, a very good wrestler. He's good on the ground, but Neiman Gracie, that's his world. So can Leminger sit there and use a striking to his advantage? Can Gracie do what he needs to do? That is an interesting fight as well. So, but to be clear, for the return home, good main event, it's not the best offering Bellator could have put together here. It just isn't.
No, just this not. Is this is this this. I was kind of surprised when I found out this was in San Jose. I figure if you're going back to San Jose, it's gonna be a crowd. They're gonna, I don't know, you know, put some names on there. But it's an okay card. I think top to bottom, UFC is clearly a better card. But there's definitely fights to watch on this Bellator card for sure.
And I think this Bellator card, because like we said, there's sort of a lot of less experienced fighters.
It's built like an old Bellator card where like the prelims are very regional, you know.
And I think you're going to see some finishes. I think you're going to see a lot of finishes. I know people sort of equate that with like, oh, what makes an exciting card is finishes, which I don't always agree with. But when you have 1-1 guys facing, you know, 0-1 guys and 0-0 facing 0-0, you're usually going to see some sort of wackiness, and that might be good for the live crowd. So the live crowd will certainly be happy. I'm not sure how the interest will be from people like tuning in, you know, online or on TV. But live, I'll be happy. There'll be some wacky finishes, and then the main card will be entertaining enough. So you know, I'm looking at this whole thing with rose-colored glasses.
As you should, AK. You are the prince of positivity.
As
after
you
all,
always so. Do, AK.
Mm. Yeah, no. Well, yeah, no.
So again, for those who are watching this after the fact, which is all of you now, who tried to watch us on the stream earlier, apologies for the technical difficulties. Casey, the man, the myth, the legend, got it all put up and taken care of. It's on the podcast network too as well. Anything else you want to discuss, Casey? You want to lead us in? Get ready to lead us out of here.
Why is that Canadian not fighting in the Ultimate Fighting Championship? She is a premier 135-pound fighter. The UFC is desperate for 135-pound contenders. She has not fought Amanda Nunes. She has not fought Irene Aldana. There's all the names at the top of the list in the UFC that she has not fought. They need strong, quality opponents like Sarah Kaufman. I don't get it. Maybe they're scared. Maybe they're scared. Maybe I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, then Irene Aldana, she just lost her opponent, right? She was supposed to fight GDR. GDR had pulled up energy. Injury.
Energy.
Energy. Yeah, she had pulled up an injury.
Pull out. Serious pull out energy.
Yeah, pull out energy. And, I mean, come on. Like, when Ronda Rousey was in the bantamweight division, like, it was like, man, like, UFC was all about it. As soon as she left, it's like, yeah, I get Amanda Nunes is on a great roll. She's the GOAT, yada, yada, yada. But the UFC hasn't built up that weight class. And you have a woman right here who will be a great opponent for any of those women at the top.
Yeah, I feel like listen,
I feel like the 35 has been like somewhat of an incestual. They keep like the top names keep fighting each other. And like, okay, mm-hmm. what matchup hasn't like number two fought in the top five versus bringing in those other talents? And so those names haven't really changed. Like the fact that Misha's back, I mean, for one, I'm into that fight if we could ever make that.
Oh, yeah. Who beat Misha Tate here? Who beat Misha Tate on this panel?
I'm trying to figure out
where the point is. Oh, but like the fact that Misha's coming back in and the names at the top are almost exactly the same is crazy. I mean, I know Holly, like we're friends and we're talking all the time and she can't get anyone to fight her. Like all the top names, they just say no. And like, that's the same thing that I've had. When I was fighting in the UFC, since I've been out of the UFC, the issue is always opponents. It's always opponents. Like, people are not willing to fight Sarah Kaufman. At one point, I signed with the management team that worked with Misha, and they had killed that fight. They said, you know what? We're not interested in that fight. Don't ask for it. We're not doing it. And then when I worked with them later, they're like, yeah, we didn't want that fight. I don't know. People don't want tough fights, I guess. But here I am, ready to go. I've been on weight for a year, trying to take any fight that's possible, that's imaginable. I have multiple promotions outside of the UFC because, you know, UFC, their big thing, they want you coming off of a win. It is impossible for me to get a win because I have zero people who will say yes to fighting me. We have literally contacted every female pretty much on the planet who fights at 35 that's not currently signed. If I'm wrong, then hit me up and we'll make this fight happen. I'm now at the point where Iridium, I'm working with Lance Spod, and he's now talking with promotions and trying to have an opponent because all these promotions, they want me, but the issue is always finding someone. So if you are willing to fight, let's make it happen. Let's get me back to the UFC. I need a win. I'll fight anybody, but I want to be the best. I know I can be the best. Amanda Nunes, currently my weight class, currently the best. I've been pushing for that fight. It was supposed to happen back in 2014. We signed a contract for 5 days. You know, things happened. She got injured. I fought Leslie Smith. And then pathways derailed. I had a car accident, which kind of put me on the sidelines. She's now the title holder. Let's make that storyline happen. But I want to fight those top five girls. Let's make it go.
Wait, when you fought Leslie in the UFC, that was originally supposed to be Amanda Nunes?
It was originally supposed to be Shayna Baszler. So Shayna got hurt. Amanda, I don't remember who she was supposed to be fighting, but she was supposed to be fighting someone else, I think, down in Florida. Mm-hmm. They matched us up together. I said, okay, sure. They just sent me a contract, signed it, and then 5 days later, I think she broke her thumb maybe, or hurt her thumb. So then she was out, and then I fought Leslie Smith. And then from there, Amanda fought Kat Zingano.
Which she lost.
Yeah. And then went on after that. So it's been a journey watching other people and saying like, "Where's Sarah Kaufman in this mix? I'm right here. Let's make it go."
Let me ask you a weird question that I shouldn't even be asking, but it's something that I think other people are thinking right now, and it's just so silly, but it is a pathway in. Would you take a Contender Series fight? It makes no sense for you to fight on the Contender Series, but we've seen UFC vets fight on the Contender Series to earn their way back. Would you ever take a Contender Series fight?
I will take any fight. This is the thing. At this point, oh my goodness, these ears. At this point, I literally will not be saying no to a fight at 35. You know, 55 is just too big. I loved fighting for the PFL. They were fantastic. If they did a 35 division, if they could make one happen, I would love to be involved in that because, again, they were a really great promotion to fight for, and I like the format. However, they don't have that. So at this point, 35, I will take any opportunity that I can, knowing that I just need a win to be able to fight the best girls in the world. And seemingly this is where, you know, the issue is right now. So I don't think that fighting someone who's not a high caliber is necessary for me to prove that I can fight these girls that I've proven that I can fight before. However, I understand this is the game. So if I need to fight someone, and at this point, it could be anybody. It could be someone with a terrible record. But if I get a win, then I have that opportunity potentially to fight these big names. So contender series, sure. A card in a backyard? Sure, I guess. But really, UFC, Amanda Nunes is where my bar is at and where it needs to be.
Come on, regional promotions. LFA, CFFC, yeah. Cage Titans, CES. Come on now. Ring-a-ding-ding.
Look, I think it's obviously I think it's great that you're open to contender series. Like we said, I think for us it would seem absurd if you had to go that route. But I understand why you're saying you just want that path back to the UFC. Any fight at 135 is the way to go. I don't know if you know this, sir. We have started our own MMA fighting rankings recently. Now you are not currently.
Sorry to interrupt. I thought you were going to say your own MMA promotion. I was going to say let's do this.
It's funny you mentioned backyard. It's funny you mentioned backyard because I have a wide backyard. We're working on getting we're getting posts up and barbed wire around it. No. We have MMAfighting.com. We call them the global ranking. So we're trying to expand beyond the UFC. Obviously, there's a lot of UFC fighters in it, the majority. But and you would be in it except for we have, I think, an 18-month inactivity period, yeah. Which obviously is not your fault. I will say, but guys, let's be honest here. It would be absurd if Sarah was on the contender series because I don't think it's. I mean, I know we agree on the show, we might be biased, but the rankings are not biased. The rankings are made by math, and math does not lie. And I tell you right now, if we included Sarah in the voting, Sarah would be a top 10 easily.
Easily.
In the top 10 Bantamweight rankings. I'm going to say some names here, and there's no disrespect to any of these women. They're all great fighters, but I mean, these are like the elite of the elite, where I think, because number 10, we have Sarah McMahon. I would put Sarah Kaufman over Sarah McMahon. I would put Sarah over Macy Chasson. I would put Sarah over Ketlin Vieira. And then we have Raquel Pennington, Yana Kunitskaya at 7-6. I would definitely put her above Yana Kunitskaya. So, and again, it sounds like I'm dissing all these names. These are all great fighters. I just think that Sarah's resume is right up there with a lot of these names. So think about this. Like, we could, like, she's saying she is open to being on Contender Series, and she's legitimately a top six at worst bantamweight in the world. That's not how this should be. She should be signed right now. She's already said everything that needs to be said. I'm just adding on to it. That's all.
Who do we have in the back there? This is fun stuff here.
Just come in.
Hi, bud. Do you think that? Does he think that I should be signed?
Should Sarah cough? Should Sarah right there be signed to the UFC?
Yes. She's back, baby. She's back. She's in.
All right. Cool.
Unprompted.
You got the 8-year-old crowd on your side.
Yeah. And that's it. At this point, I think it's like contenders or no, I just need to be fighting. But mm-hmm. I also think prior to, a few years ago, I had fought a lot of the people in the top. So maybe you could say the matchups would be stale. But now, literally, like the top 10 in the UFC, I don't even know if I fought any of them. I don't have it up right now, but there's so many fun fights for me. Let's do this.
Amanda, Jermaine, Holly Holm, Aldana. These are all great fights. Yes. These fights sell themselves. I don't know. This is ridiculous, but thank you, top 10 bantamweight Sarah Kaufman, for spending time with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, Casey, on the ones and twos. Thank you, AK, for your incredible insight, as always.
Thanks, guys. This has been so fun. And thank you. Yep. My dog didn't bark one time today, top notch.
Well done.
Yes, my dog is not barking either, so that's a good thing. So for AK, for Casey, For Sarah Kaufman, I am Mike Heck. Lots of MMA tomorrow. Join us tomorrow, shall you? See you then.
Happy birthday, AK.
Happy birthday.
Is it your birthday?
It absolutely is.
No, it is not.
Happy birthday.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.